Get ready to laugh your ass off.
I'm ashamed God made me a man.
I don't think God's doing a lot of bragging about it either.
What's happening, Captain?
Well, hello there. It's Denise from My Lesbian Radio and the Lesbian Lounge. And I just thought I would do a quick podcast to let you know that I am feeling the pain of this election just like every one of you out there. I may be based and located in London. I've been through the Brexit thing, but I am an American. And I will always consider that my home. And this is killing me. It's killing me. So this is like a double blow. Like, I felt horrible about Brexit and what was going to happen. And, you know, and then here we are 6 months later with Donald Trump, the president-elect. And I know, like, many of you, I sat through election night, you know, and probably the same way as everybody else did, feeling hopeful and swelling with pride and thinking that this was going to be the moment. We were making history together, all the work that we had done, pushing and you know, supporting our Democratic candidate, Hillary Clinton. And then just having it slowly and slowly and slowly implode in front of us was absolutely insane. Like, I don't think my tears actually started until about 4:30 in the morning. Like, I didn't need for there to be a projection proclamation or anything. Like, it was apparent, and I didn't stop crying, and I mean, like, blubber cry, ugly cry, like little girl dropping an ice cream cone cry, big time. And it lasted, man, it lasted the whole next day, because it just took the wind. It was like getting punched in the gut, and, you know, like, just repeatedly, because it was just all over. You couldn't get away from it, couldn't turn to social media, couldn't watch television. I mean, it was just everywhere, and it was awful. So believe me when I tell you, I get it. I'm in the same boat. I don't really know what to do or say. I don't know how to feel. You know, it was interesting, because I was voting for a female Democratic presidential nominee. I was voting because, not just because she was female, I was voting because I believed in the things that she was fighting for equality, for equal pay, you know, closing that gender gap, for a number of things, for pushing for stronger gun laws, for mental health, for background checks, pushing for better mental health in general. And I think that this Obamacare thing really upsets me a lot, that people are screaming about the premiums going up. And I don't, they just, you know, just like anything, nobody wants to take the time to do the research. Obamacare is not an insurance company that's raising premiums. Obamacare was put in place to regulate insurance companies on a few major things, like if you have a pre-existing condition, you can still get health care. If your treatment exceeds a certain amount of money, they can't drop you. They have to keep paying. You know, things like that. It's not, insurance companies are raising premiums because the scourge of humanity walks into ER because they have bronchitis, or they have a respiratory illness, or they've broken a bone and they don't have coverage. So they go into an ER and they rack up a massive bill that they have no intention of paying. And that, you know, and then taxpayers end up paying that. But because insurance companies aren't getting paid, they're raising premiums, and that's what people don't understand. So do your research before you cry about that. And I think part of it is that I think I believe that Hillary knew that there were things that were wrong with Obamacare, and she was going to try and do something about it. And if we would have had if she would have had the presidency, and we would have had more Democrats in the Senate, and so things like this would be passed instead of being stopped and obstructed every time Obama tried to do something. You know, I got sick of hearing about Benghazi. I mean, this is the woman that requested the funding for additional security for Benghazi, for that embassy, and then the GOP turned it down. People were making such an amazing deal, and I'm not saying that the loss of any American lives is okay. What I'm saying is that 244 American lives were lost at embassies during the Bush administration, and it was nowhere to be found. Nobody gave it the attention that they gave Benghazi, and I think it's because Hillary was a woman. I'm sure it's because of it. You know, and this email thing, I thought to myself, my God, if Bernie Sanders, if any other Democratic nominee was running, and there was an investigation, don't tell me that they wouldn't be smashing their personal devices with hammers and wiping their emails clean. You know, she got caught, she admitted it, she moved on, and don't tell me she didn't learn from it, for God's sake. I mean, man, if anything, you learn from something like that, you know. But the bottom line is enduring not one but two Senate hearings, being put at the center of a witch hunt, you know, sitting there for 11 hours being grilled and badgered, having the FBI go through every bit of your, you know, like going up your ass with a microscope, basically, you know, and not flinching. You know, and I think when she said in her concession speech, when she said it's worth it to keep fighting for things that are right, you know, I think that she didn't waver and she was steady because she was right, you know. And then the FBI just, you know, got involved at the last minute, 9 days out, you know, from an election, and and started it up again, you know, just threw that monkey wrench. And made everybody, the awareness was heightened. It just gave more fuel to what an awful, evil witch, you know, she was. And this, you know, had more to do with Anthony Weiner than anything else. And it wasn't until, the day before, that they cleared her. The week before, I don't even know what it was. I've lost track, like 3 days before. They cleared her of any wrongdoing once again. And, you know, these are the things that bothered me. I was going to vote for her regardless of those two things that the media just kept throwing at the public, you know, Benghazi and the emails and the FBI. So, then this new stuff about the Clinton Foundation. Oh, my God, they took money from Qatar. You know, this is a country that belittles women, that beheads gays, and they use that money for Chelsea's wedding. And OK, what about the Trump Foundation? You know, has it not occurred to anybody that they bought a 6-foot painting of Donald Trump with the charity money? I don't, like, what is he doing? I mean, we'll never know because his taxes were never made public. So we don't know. We don't even know, you know, that the man is a billionaire. You know, we don't know anything. You know, we know that he evaded taxes for 20 years, which meant he took no part in new infrastructure, our military, our schools, our roads, our bridges. These are the things that he says he's going to fix. So this is the first time that I think I've been so aware. And I regret that. I regret that it took an election like this of historical proportions to make me get involved and learn how to research the things that were important to me. I was very pro medical marijuana. You know, I was very, concerned about climate change, all these things, raising the minimum wage. You know, we're talking, Hillary wanted to get the minimum wage to $15 an hour, and it might have been a slow increase, but that was her goal. Donald Trump has said maybe 10, you know, and here it's like the middle class is crying that there's no jobs, and they vote for the guy that shipped his jobs to Mexico and China. You know, like, these are the things I didn't get. I felt like her passion was behind creating more jobs. That was a major part of every speech and every debate. And, you know, her plans were more detailed. You know, every fact-checking, lie-detecting thing you could find out there on the web said that she was more truthful. She's done more. She's made more progress. And, you know, I don't know. I just feel like the things she were saying just struck me. And, you know, in the same sense, you know, you have the Trump supporters that are saying she never backed LGBT rights until 2011. Before that, she was anti-gay marriage. You know what? I don't care what made her change her mind. You know, in my opinion, I feel like maybe what happened was she listened to enough people talk about the plight and the struggle and changed her stance on it. It wasn't about pandering to our community to get those votes. That's my thought. You know, when people, you know, tell me that, you know, the Clinton Foundation is just this awful organization that they're filtering money through to better themselves, make themselves richer. And I looked into it and I thought, oh my God, they have an A+ rating. You know, I don't think that in this day and age you could, well, let me rephrase that. I think in this day and age, if you're a woman, you better have your ducks in a fucking row, because you know that there's journalists, there's media, there's the opposing camp, the opposing candidates, there's big money that's going to be made if they find something, if they find something. So I want to go with the candidate that didn't get caught, that didn't crumble, that didn't fly off the handle, that didn't tweet angry tweets. I want to go with the candidate that I felt had the experience, that backed the issues that were important to me. My mother has MS. So, you know, when I worry about them taking Obamacare away, I worry about Trump mocking the disabled. Obviously, he has no compassion for them, so anything that's going to make life better for them is not going to be important to him. You know, whereas Hillary has done so much for the disabled. If you go back and you research what she did when she was First Lady of Arkansas, Democratic Senator in New York, look at the things that she's done. You know, it blows my mind. It just blows my mind. And I think to watch all that, you know, to have all that hope for the things that mean so much to you, finally being addressed, you know, that is what, it wasn't just the female presidency. It wasn't just women's rights. It wasn't, you know, the abortion, the Planned Parenthood, you know, Roe versus Wade getting overturned, equal marriage getting overturned. It wasn't just those things. They went so much deeper. They went into climate change. For me, they went into climate change. It went into medical marijuana. It went into, you know, disability. It went into healthcare. I guess it was just things that I had just taken for granted. And now they were so important because there was this threat that they wouldn't be there. We wouldn't have access to the things that are so important. And so I was voting for more than just the woman thing. And the possibility that all the things that were important to me all at once were going to be addressed was this hope bubble that was, you're so happy, you know, just so happy, you know, that things, were going to be better and go smoother. And, there was going to be, this blanket equality that would come along with everything. And I think that's what has to do with this utter, ridiculous, overwhelming despair and darkness and grief that everybody's feeling, is that it was all dashed away and so fast, you know, and you just keep going, what happened? What happened? What happened to the blue wall? What, you know, were there, was it just a bunch of sneaky people that never stressed who they were supporting, that hung up on pollsters working the phones, that didn't, you know, I mean, how could everybody get this so wrong? It just was a ridiculous, ridiculous feeling. And I don't know what to do. I just don't. I don't know what to say. I don't know how to make myself feel better. I don't know what to do for my friends that are feeling awful. But, you know, I guess one of the things, you know, social media plays such a huge part in our mindset nowadays, you know, like we all gear ourselves in our timelines and our news feeds, you know, we gear them to see what we want to see. We're filling them with like-minded people. We're, I guess, you know, our algorithms are reflecting in the sites that we see, in the headlines that we see. And, you know, that was just spurring us on. And then afterwards, you know, it was, I don't know whether it was better to follow along and see that everybody was in the same kind of grieving, mourning, darkness, you know, that I was in, that we were in. You know, for a moment, it was comforting to know that, you know, I'm not the only one that feels this way. But, you know, as the day progressed and, you know, exit polls were showing one thing and broadcasters were saying another thing and everybody was looking at where to point the blame. You know, it was being touted in the media that this was a middle class uprising. It was a movement by the middle class. And, you know, I don't believe that. I don't believe it. You know, in my opinion, some of the things I saw, some stats that I saw showed that 50% of white voters that made $50,000 a year through $99,000 a year voted Trump. 46% of them voted for Hillary. Those making $100,000 to $200,000, 48% voted for Trump. $200,000 a year to $250,000 a year. 49% of people earning that kind of income voted for Trump. So I don't see where that feels middle classy to me. Middle class to me is like 30 to 50,000, you know, under 30,000. Those people under 30,000, 53% of them voted for Hillary Clinton. People that made 30,000 to 50,000, 51% of them voted for Hillary Clinton. 42% voted Trump. 41% under 30,000 voted Trump. 41% of people making under 30,000 a year voted for Donald Trump. So, you know, this bullshit about the disenfranchised people that have been forgotten and people who want change, this middle class that wants change and jobs, I don't get it. I do not get it. I don't get how anybody, I mean, a fraction of the things that we're seeing on social media are true. And a bigger fraction of what we see, it's not true. You know, and I hate is a strong word. It's a really strong word. And I'm having a really hard time with it because, you know, my mind is telling me to hate Trump supporters. And some of those people are people that I love and I respected. And I use that in the past tense. I don't hate the people, but I don't respect them anymore, and I'm really having a hard time with that. And I've had really civilized conversations. Like, I know that we're seeing so much hate on Facebook, and there is going to be that group of people that are chanting, lock her up, lock the bitch up. You know, you're going to have your group of deplorables, and they're so aptly named, and they earn that title day after day after day. You know, with their vicious, vicious rhetoric, you know, that came from the guy they voted in. Okay, I get that. You know, but I've had civilized conversations with some people that are Trump supporters. You know, one family, one close friend, one not so close friend that's just a, you know, distant person I went to high school with through Facebook. And I realized that they voted on issues, you know. My family member articulately explained, really, that she voted because her biggest concerns are terrorism, jobs, and the economy. And she didn't feel like Hillary Clinton was going to do anything for those three issue, those three points that were the biggest deal. She also said that she refused to believe a lot of what the media was showing regarding Donald Trump. She refused to believe that he was a misogynistic, racist bigot. She said that she felt like that was a persona that he was putting on to get votes, to tap into that element of the American people, to get them to vote for him. Because she said that she thought that he saw that as a niche, that nobody else was going to represent those people. And he felt that she felt that that's why he was pandering to them. But that in her heart, she didn't feel like he was really going to build a wall. He was really going to kick out legal, and she stressed legal, immigrants. She was she feels he's trying to keep out the element that everybody fears, you know, that by letting immigrants in the country, you're not going to be able to vet all of them properly, and the bad ones are going to slip in, and that's what she felt like a lot of people believed, so that was why they supported him. So she, you know, did her best to make a logical, civilized argument of why she was voting, and I simply said to her, I have to vote for the candidate that's not threatening to take away my rights, and I don't think that you will ever be able to understand that, because you are a white, heterosexual woman that married the man that you wanted to marry and had kids, and you never had to struggle for the same kind of equality that's just been gifted to you, whereas we've had to fight for the simplest of human rights, you know, marriage equality, DOMA, don't ask, don't tell, you know, all that, you know, and that's all fallen under, you know, Obama's administration, and, you know, has made us proud and has pushed us forward, and we want someone that's not threatening that, and that was one of my main concerns, and I also wanted someone that had experience, and to which she said, well, I think a lot of people are looking for change, and there it is, the key word, change. By not having a career politician who's been bought and paid for by corporations. And I said, you know, I get that. And I thought that that was a respectable thing in the beginning. But then when I realized that a lot of his funding, he was making money off of, you know, yeah, he's self-funded, but he's routing everything back through himself, you know, so having his headquarters at Trump Towers, you know, just... the list goes on, you know. So I've had these arguments with people that I see were truly passionate about their candidate, and as well as I was. And I, you know, there were times where I felt like I hit the wall. I hit the wall so hard, you know, like you can't change their mind, just like they're not going to change my mind. They're not going to change my mind about her. And then there was a family friend who... you know, jumped on my Facebook almost every chance that she got to say that I was being misled by what was in the media. And to that, like, all I could think of was like, I'm a pretty intelligent person, and I feel like I'm not being misled, because I'm not, it's not about what the media is putting out. It's what's coming out of his mouth. They're not clipping together a bunch of sentences and making it look like he said something. These are things he said. These are things that I've watched him say. I'm not reading in an article. I'm not questioning whether a quote was true, whether I was looking at a left-wing media outlet and reading it, or I was trying to stay completely biased and trying to find a source that I felt was so bipartisan. And so, you know, I don't feel like I was being misled, but, you know, her argument was that the press was making him look like a monster. And she shared a lot of the similar beliefs as my family member did. Fear, this blanket of fear about terrorism and everything. And I'm thinking to myself, I think if I was still living there, I would be more fearful of the person living next door to me. You know, the crazy quiet guy that you barely see. You know, he's the one that's shooting kids in a schoolyard. You know, when you talk about like the Pulse tragedy and everything, that's an American-born Muslim, American-born, you know, who's been radicalized by what he sees on the internet and what he's searching for. You know, that is not someone that snuck in. That's not someone that was part of a cell that was sent from Syria or, you know, Iraq. It's just, I can't, you know, it's really, really hard. And I think I was having this discussion with my wife. We were talking about how I think after 9/11, everybody had this one job to do, and that was to kind of move on, like to rise above it and move on. And we did our best, you know. We did, and it wasn't easy. I mean, I'll tell you that much. It really wasn't easy. And I think the thing is, we we still have that fear deep within us that could happen again. And by all means, of course, we should. You know, we should, but we can't think that one man is going to prevent it. You know, we can't. And that's what they truly believe, that he's going to prevent it. He's got a better idea, even though he's never explained it to us. Even though all he did was, you know, poke at Hillary Clinton for not doing anything about it while she was Secretary of State, you know. But let's not take away from the fact that she was in the Situation Room when Osama bin Laden was taken out, you know. She was part of that administration that did that began the dismantling. You know, it's so difficult. You know, I saw so much stuff on social media on Election Day, so much stuff about, Trump supporters with their voter intimidation right in my hometown, right in Coral Springs, blocking the public library that was a polling station. And I posted it on my site, you know, and man, I'll tell you what, the Trump supporters jumped all over it and said, you know, it didn't happen. That's not the way. They're just making it look that way. There were, you know, they were standing there, but they weren't preventing anyone from going in, and that's their right. And, you know, the media is making it look so bad, making Trump supporters look so bad. And, you know, that's the stuff that I, you know, moving forward, I'm trying to avoid. I really am. I'm trying to avoid that, I don't know, the gloating, you know, the how offensive it can be. And, you know, thankfully, the Trump supporters in my life aren't the gloating ones, you know, but I see that all over Facebook. I see what's happening. I see people posting pictures of friends that have already been harassed and beaten up, you know, LGBT people. I've seen the tweets about, you know, Muslim people that are fearful to wear their hijabs. I see people that are, you know, just frightened and fearful, and it's scary, you know. And then I have a lot of people saying, you know, stop being so dramatic, you know, get over it, move on, this, it is what it is. And that's, I think, the part that I'm having a hard time with, is that there's really no way to explain to them what it's like to, you know, all I can do is equate it to the fear you feel about terrorism is the fear we feel just walking into the grocery store, just pumping gas, just doing everyday things, the same things that you're doing, and you're fearful of a bomb being dropped on your fucking head. Well, I'm fearful of one of your compadres punching me in the face. I'm fearful of them, setting my car on fire, defacing my work building, you know, scribbling on my walls in my home. You know, that's the kind of stuff that we lived with, and we've lived with for so long. And when you start feeling like there's progress being made, and then to have that taken away in an instant because the presidential candidate who won wants to take, you know, those rights, wants to set us back, you know, it makes us fearful. You know, we're talking about a guy that has said that he wants to ban Muslims, that Mexicans are criminals and rapists, that you can grab a woman by the pussy. You can, you know, this is the man that's leading the country, and they expect us to be okay with it because they don't believe it. They don't believe that you know, he feels that way. We have no choice but to believe it because we've been there and we fought and we know what the struggle is like, and now we understand that we have to do it again. You know, and I'm not saying that I'm so, I'm in such despair, because I know that there were good things that came from this election. There were. And I'm just going to name off a couple. But Catherine Cortez Masto, first Latina in the Senate. Ilhan Omar, first Somalian American legislator in the U.S. Kamala Harris, California's first African American senator. Tammy Duckworth, first Thai-born disabled senator, veteran. Zena Stevens, Texas first African American female sheriff. So there were things that came from this that make me feel a lot less hopeless. And I'm not saying that our struggle is going to get any better. I'm just saying that, you know, there were a few positives. I've read things about Democratic senators saying that they're not going to let our rights be stripped away. They're not, they're going to fight for us. And that's, that makes me feel good. I don't know that I feel better, but it makes me feel good that they're thinking of us. But it doesn't take away the worry that I feel for my immigrant friends, my Muslim friends, my Mexican friends, my women friends, that kind of stuff is, I guess, what worries me along with my own fears. And there's been a lot of things today, November 10th, that I'm seeing. A lot of things, I think we're in a situation now where we've got to figure out what's going to make us feel better, what's going to make us feel good. And it may be, I said this to a friend of mine, and you can look it up in our Lesbian Lounge Facebook group. But I gave this advice to a friend through text message too, who was kind of like, is it wrong for me to just want to stay in bed, because I don't know what else to do and I'm fearful, and I think because of the way a lot of people are feeling, we need to find a way, and I don't care whether it's big or small, or it wouldn't impress somebody else. We've got to find ways to make ourselves feel better, because nothing is going to restore your faith in humanity right away. So we should start working on restoring ourselves, and that means doing anything, small or big, if you feel like eating a dozen donuts is going to make you feel better, then fine, do it. You want to go visit a pet rescue center or write a blog to get it all out, and keep writing. Like some people, purge, and take solace in their writing. That makes them feel better, and that's fine. You want to eat a pizza with friends? Do you want to work on a DIY project that takes you out of, watching television and scrolling through social media that gets your mind on something else? You want to rent your favorite comedy, and just watch that and eat a pizza. Or if you want to make a donation to Planned Parenthood, anything, contact your senator. There's a lot of stuff going around on social media about what you can do to make yourself feel better. I think it's because we need this reminder. We need this reminder that it's okay to be ourselves. It's okay to be ourselves, because we're feeling like that's not allowed, and we need to know that it is allowed. It is. It feels like it's being challenged, but we're allowed to be ourselves, and that means doing what you want to do at that moment. If you want to join a protest, then that's fine. If you want to hashtag everything, he's not my president, that's fine. If you want to make a donation to Planned Parenthood, if you want to look into these scenarios that they're talking about that could still get Hillary in the White House because of her winning the popular vote, there's been a lot of stuff about the Electoral College that gets together December 19th to make their final votes for president in their respective state capitals. There's a thing called Faithless Elector. And although the idea the electors trying to reverse the vote is occasionally discussed, going faithless, it's extremely rare. But you know what? Take that shot. Take that shot right to your senator that's part of the Electoral College. Find out. Do some research. Go to your .gov sites and go to factcheck.org and find out what it's all about, because it could make a difference, and it's going to make you feel better. You know, it was after, like, the Pulse tragedy, I think, that made me realize that if you just sit and feel bad, it, you know, that festers and festers and festers, and it really gets in your head. And I think the tiniest step of doing something that's going to make you feel better, and you don't have to share it with everybody. You could do it just for yourself. And if you want to share it with people, if you want to be the one that organizes a protest or a group or something to vent, then be that person and get it out. But if you want to do something that's just for yourself, then fine, do it just for yourself. You don't have to let anybody know what you're doing, because you're taking care of yourself, and that's your business. So there's a lot of stuff about what comes next. And I get that. And that is, it's important. It's important to know what comes next. We've seen a lot of stuff about what's happened in just a day. But I guess we've got to think about long term. And that might mean that we've got to be patient. You know, I know that there's a lot, there's like a million people right now talking about the Electoral College. And that's a lot of people. It's not enough, but it's a lot. And that's going to spread, and it's going to grow. And if it feels you, if it makes you feel better to get involved and do some research and find out what this faithless elector is, then do that. Do it. Do it. You know, there's articles going around about, here's why we grieve today. It was written by John Pavlovitz. You can go to johnpavlovitz.com and read that too. And I think it's really difficult to explain to somebody whose team has won why you're feeling like you do. Like, they can't imagine why we're grieving. Like, they don't understand why we feel like this is like the loss of a loved one. You know, either they never supported Obama, they didn't like what he stood for or what he did, and they certainly didn't want four more years of that with another career politician. You know, fine, that's okay, that's how they thought, and, you know, whatever. But I guess the thing of it is that they don't get how we're feeling, and maybe it's not up to us to make them get it. You know, it's on us. We feel the way we do, and that's our business. You know, like, if you lost a parent or you lost a loved one, and you're at a funeral and everybody's coming up to you and they're saying, I'm so sorry, they know that that's what they're supposed to say, and you know to expect it. And these people that see us grieving and mourning, I think they feel like we're being dramatic. They don't get that they should just say, I'm sorry, and move on like they would at a funeral, because that's what we're feeling. You know, they feel like it's an exaggerated reaction and an emotional reaction, and they're not going to understand it. Maybe they've never felt threatened. You know, that's one of the things I think. So they're not going to get it. Maybe we should just stop trying to make them understand it and just take an action that makes us feel better. And maybe one day they will, you know, do something that's going to inform them in a big way, you know. And it's going to take a while. We got 4 years to make an action plan and stick to it, you know. I'm thrilled to see the people who've stepped up and spoke out. You know, I can't get enough of Samantha Bee. I can't get enough of Seth Meyers. I read Aaron Sorkin's heartfelt letter that he wrote to his daughter. I follow Patton Oswalt on Twitter, and you know, the guy's been through some real pain this year, losing his wife and everything, and I think that through that he's been able to express his feelings better than anyone I can think of. You know, I'm proud of the people that have been so vocal, because we need something relatable to feel a part of. Again, you know, it feels like that ended on election night, and we felt like there was never going to be anybody that got it. But there are people out there that do get it. that feel the same way, and I'm happy that they're letting people know that they feel that way. It's important. It really is. So my best advice is that, you know, we try and distract ourselves from the noise. You know, I know that Hillary Clinton's speech yesterday was probably, I mean, like she said, it's painful and it's going to be painful for a long time. But we've got to come together. And then I listened to Obama, you know, and they're urging us to give the guy a chance. And, you know, it's like, I don't understand why they have to say it. We are pretty much forced to. But nobody wants to feel that way. I think that's the problem. And there's a lot of you out there that are saying, I don't. There's a protest in Miami on November 11th at 6 p.m. if anybody is interested in that. It's at Bayfront Park Amphitheater, and it's from 6 to 10. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say this is a peaceful protest, and it's important. So, again, if these are the things that are making you feel better, by all means, get involved and do it. We've got to take care of ourselves if we're going to stick together for the next 4 years and try and create some change so that this doesn't happen again. And that's really all I can tell you. This has been a tough one. I'm with you. I feel it. I can't stand it. I hate feeling this way. I'm not used to feeling this way. You know, it's hard. It's even, I don't know how comedians are doing it. I don't know how they're going on. It's hard to laugh right now. You know, it really is. So I think, you know, we got to be mindful about what we're taking in. And that's going to be hard because social media plays a huge part of it. So we've got to, you know, on our own filter out, what we're taking in because we just can't overload ourselves. I mean, it's one thing if that's what motivates you, but it's another thing if it's just affecting you in a negative way. You got to focus on the positive, and that may be unfriending people, unfollowing people, you know, revamping your Twitter feed, being a little bit more selective about the media and the outlets that you follow. Because I know I did, you know, I mean, right up to the election, I was following 538, I was following Daily Cause, I was following Raw Story, Daily Edge, you know, all these, I guess people were retweeting it and I found what they were saying. So I went ahead and followed who they were retweeting. And here my timeline was just filled with so much political stuff and it overwhelmed me. It overwhelmed me in a huge way, you know, and you know, I'm one of the people that has the time for it. Maybe you're someone that doesn't have the time for it. And if that's true, then God bless you. But it's out there and it's creeping in and we need to be really careful about what we're letting in. So, you know, that's some of my best advice. And like I said before, do what makes you feel good about being yourself because you are still allowed to be yourself. And that's one thing you don't want to forget. I know that we can take care of ourselves by being aware of our surroundings, watching who we surround ourselves with, just paying attention about what we're doing and where we're at. But you don't, you know, I hate thinking that everybody's living in fear. And I felt that way after Brexit because I saw this rise of racism that felt like it was allowed. Still not allowed, but people feel like they got a free pass when something like this happens. And it's scary. And I feel like, I'm afraid of protests getting out of hand. I'm afraid of riots breaking out, you know, that kind of thing. We just have to protect ourselves. And you know, above all, we've got to rise above the hate, keep it peaceful, and do what's best for each other, ourselves and each other. And that's the important thing. So, all I can do, I guess, is just leave you with a song. So it's been wonderful catching up. I hope that you guys stick with the Lesbian Lounge, stick with My Lesbian Radio. Give Heather and Nicole a chance on Ragtime. They've got funny stuff. They're crude. They're offensive. They're brutally honest. And you'll get a laugh or two. You know, I love that our book club podcast is still racking up numbers. People are super interested in what Claire Lydon is doing and who she's talking to, and that's fantastic for our lesbian fiction authors. That's a big group that I'm still impressed with and awed by. You know, there's stuff to do to maybe, there's stuff to listen to, I should say, that will make you smile. And I know it feels like there's not much out there that will, but it's there. You just have to look for it. So, you know, we want to be a part of that. That's my goal. So I'm going to leave you with, a classic, if you will. And I'll say goodbye now. And, I love you guys. I mean it. I'll try and do more of these. Today's a quiet day on the construction site outside of my front door. So I was able to do this and I felt like I had to. If you need someone, contact me through email, thelesbianloungepodcast@gmail.com. I will answer as quickly as I can. I'm here for you. You can always Facebook me, message me, find me on Twitter @lesbianlounge. I miss you guys. Love you guys. Take it easy and take care of each other.